Lori told me that since we were reading in alphabetical order, that I'd be reading of the guest poets, I'd be reading last, and if I would introduce Ed, which is fine, so I'll save my remarks after I read a few poems. I'm going to read four. One of the interesting things about Ed's poetry for me is that when we think about poems, individual poems, we frequently think about poems on the page. But these poems I'm going to read, they first astounded me when I heard him read them. Habitually with Ed and I living in the same city, I would go to a reading in which a new book was coming out or new poems were being presented. So these were poems that I had not read on the page, and they just struck me as just so wonderful. So I've picked four of these to read. One of them is called the Goodbye, Farewell, Auf Wiedersehen poem, and it's dedicated for Gar, being Gar Bethel, who was moving back to the Midwest. And here's the poem. And one of the things I love about this poem is this marvelous first sentence, which I frequently repeat at odd moments, as you can imagine. We are all driving to the house of God in the dark. Yes, and the long lashes of my windshield wipers brush the tears from the curved glass. Hush, hush, deep into the night and wonderful. The prudent asleep in their tiny houses. The sorrow of paperwork limp on their desks. And wonderful the hum and plash of the rubber on the wet roads and the distance from the sleeping ego that grackle with its I. Not the distance from, but the traveling to, effortless as the cars glide down the S-curve outside Apollo, over the rumbly steel waffle of the Kiski Bridge, to the small lights of the empty town, a single figure leaning on a column at the one hotel, and the rain. May we only ever be lonely by choice, driving to a bubble of light and to sleep, and in the morning the strong rinsed sun on the floor, on the table, the dark iris, in the consolation of its old vase. And the first time I heard that poem, and I heard him say vase, where I would say vase, I mean, that just was a wonderful moment for me. And also, I hope that bridge is still there, but before I took refuge as a caseworker for the welfare department, I was in direct sales, and I've had many occasions during those years to drive across that bridge, and it was always a great pleasure because there was a great feeling and a great sound to it. So I'm happy for this poem, which mentions some things that I really like. Here's another favorite of mine, The Canaries in Uncle Arthur's Basement. In the White House in Rutherford, the ancient upright piano never worked, and the icy kitchen smelled of spick and span. Aunt Lizzie's pumpkin pie turned out green, and no one ate it but me. And I did, because it was the green of the back porch. That was the Thanksgiving it rained, and I first thought of rain as tears, because Aunt Lizzie was in tears, because Arthur came home from the soccer game drunk, and because he missed dinner, brought a potted plant for each female relative, and walked around the table kissing each one as Lizzie said, "Arthur, you fool, you fool." The tears running down her cheek as Arthur's knobby knees wobbled in his referee's shorts and his black striped filthy shirt, wet from the rain, looked like a convict's. What did I know? I thought it meant something. I thought no one would ever be happy again. I thought if I were Uncle Arthur, I'd never again come out from the dark basement where he raised canaries, the cages wrapped in covers Aunt Lizzie sewed, and where once, when I was very small, and because Uncle Arthur loved me, or loved his skill, or both, he slowly removed the cover from a cage, and a brilliant gold bird burst into song. Thank you. Again, if I stumble, there's not a lot of light up here, but I'm doing okay. Here's one called Working at the Wholesale Curtain Showroom. Ed, of course, I know most of you have probably read all his work, and you know his affinity for actual real people who work in this world. Working at the wholesale curtain showroom. "Can you type?" Jake said. "Maybe 10 words a minute." "That's okay," Jake said. "We just get a couple letters now and then. What we need is a smart kid to be nice to customers. You don't have to know anything about curtains. Just be nice when people come through the door. Talk nice to the buyers. You don't have to know nothing about curtains. Just show them the weight of the samples. We got all this stuff, the styles, the prices printed on the cards. What we need is a nice, educated kid like you. You'll do fine." And I did. And this is in praise of Jake, may he have prospered, who paid me for nothing and who knew the great secret of living, be nice, and who once sent me with roses to the apartment of a female buyer with the warning, "This is a fine lady. Look around and tell me what the place looks like. You can tell a lot about people from the look of their place." And I came back and said, "She's got a nice place, and she's really pretty, and she's got a full set of the Yale Shakespeare books in her living room." And Jake said, "Oh, shit. I'll never get anywhere with her if she's an intellectual." And this last one I'm going to read, I think, again, reveals Ed's compassion and also his understanding of history. It's called "The Whitehead Medal Stickball Team at Lunch Hour on West 10th Street." Duke, like a gorilla with a stripped branch in each in his hand. Let me start over. Duke, like a gorilla with a stripped branch in his hand, tongue stretching in concentration to his nose, could hit the Spalding pink ball into the Hudson. Harry the Head, the nervous macrocephalic, who is your friend forever if you bought him a shot of Cutty Sark, was a scooter, but had lousy hands. And Jackie Olson, the Ivy Leaguer who took one course a term at night at Columbia, played wearing one of his three or four ties from Chips. And Ronald from the warehouse led the cheers. "Let's see you fuckers hit the ball for once." And Tony Sciotto, who had five kids and $70 a week, laughed always when he ran the bases. Thomas said, "It all happens in a flash of light." That's right. And whenever I remember those words, I think of a baseball field in August, a few gulls floating over the bright green as Parker hits a grand slam against LA. Or that poor street where nothing ever happened except trucks hauling sleet and slab, and at lunch, that motion and yelling, everyone in a momentary pure relation with everybody else, and the filthy river's gulls floating over, the joy of movement as the sun looks down on the poor and the great, as it did on the soldiers crawling up the beach at Anzio, or on the Enola Gay in the Serene during its way to Hiroshima, or on the great Emperor Maximin killed in his tent by his troops in June. We're godlike in our capacity to forget. Hey, listen, once it happens, it's gone. And don't kid yourself. When you're happy, you're happy. Don't kid yourself. When you're dead, you're dead. I don't know what happened to any of them. I remember Jackie Olson, the smart one, was promoted to salesman. And I remember him rigid with happiness, bouncing up and down in his swivel chair. The night before Harry the Head joined the army, I bought him a scotch at the White House. He got in just in time for Vietnam. There's so much pain, you're a fool for talking about it. But what's amazing is how those in pain think it's normal. What's wonderful is that it never changes. How the damned laugh and sing when they can. How the years change everything to gold. Thank you. So anyway, about those years. Now, in 1974, five of us founded Pittsburgh Poetry Exchange as an association of local poets. The reason we did was because we felt, because we weren't in the university or on the want list of the International Poetry Forum, we felt that we were lacking access. So we developed our own programs, produced readings, workshops, things like that. But even though mythically, in myth and tradition, there's this wall between town and gown, between university poets and community poets, and that may be true in some cities. But what happened was, Ed came to town shortly after we founded Pittsburgh Poetry Exchange. We started finding out who was reading when at Pitt, and we started showing up for those readings. And I think people realized we were serious about poetry. And then the Hemingway series started. And what I'm getting to is this, that one of the wonderful things about Ed Ochester as a man and as a poet is that I've always felt Ed was a very welcoming person. We were outside the university. He had no need to be interested in us. He wasn't being paid to teach us or anything like that. But he had this welcoming personality. We felt good. And over the years, I think there's been a very good relationship built between poets in the community and poets in the university. And to a great extent, there's no real separation. Jan Beatty surely would be considered someone who came out of the community, now is running a program at Carlow. And I think it's people like Ed Ochester who contributed to that. I also want to mention, too, in terms of welcoming, another individual who was a welcoming presence at Hemingway's was Bruce Dobler. And again, to digress, and I'm not going to go on for hours, so don't worry. I could if you let me, but I'm not. But I also want to mention, Ed's gracious wife, Britt, and the fact that aside from being a great editor, and I know he's been a great teacher because I've known many of his students, and aside from being a terrific poet, here he is. He has these two wonderful children. They're not children anymore. They're adults. But I know Ned some and Betsy, and I think this is a tribute, that here we've got a guy who's done all these things in the arts, namely poetry, and he represents what's best about American families, I think, and his children. So that's my contribution of what I think about Ed or what I wanted to say. And at this point now, Ed's going to come up and read, and I believe there are going to be books for sale of Ed's. So if you don't have it, have a book, buy one. If you have it, buy one for a loved one. But welcome, Ed Ochester.